open mind, an ideal second sense delighted people. What the night is in store for you? Ransom. Oh, the whole world is in the ransom. Douglas Morris. We've been hearing a lot about you, Nick, and your work with the Crystal Skull. Dale Walker was here, and he tantalized us one night for about 15 minutes about the Crystal Skull. And he wouldn't talk about it until the last 15 minutes of the show, because he said everybody would be wanting to talk about the skull. And he was absolutely right. So you're here, and we're for an hour and a half or so, we're going to talk about the skull. What is the Crystal Skull? Why is it important?
Well, number one, there are more than one crystal skull. There's more than one crystal skull. That's the first thing we got to understand.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
The Mitchell Hedges skull is unique in that it's one of the most fabulous, I think, jewels in the world. It's a 9-pound skull which has movable jaws that are perfectly carved out of one piece of quartz. It is optically fantastic in that light that goes through it comes out any precise place you want it to come out in the eyes. You can adjust the skull and make certain things happen. There are all kinds of talks about what it is or isn't, but nobody really knows. Nobody knows how to make one. Hewlett Packard, who did the study on it, their scientists there, agreed that it's possible in a year's time, 24 hours a day, they might get close to making something like it without a guarantee. It's unique for this basic reason, in that the British skull is locked up in a museum and you can't touch it. The Aztec skull is locked up in Paris and you can't touch it, if you can even get to see it. The Mayan skull is locked up in Texas and can't be reached. The San Jose skull is locked up in San Jose. It's the only skull that the owner allows people to come and touch and be with. The only rule they have, basically, is because we have a copyright, is that you can't photograph it. But you can actually touch the skull, you can sit with it, and you can watch movies taking place in this thing. If you're a scryer, particularly, scrying is where you use the physical eye and look into the crystal. You activate it mentally, and all of a sudden you see history going by. Whatever history was, it's a very completely puzzling thing. We can talk about some of that. Its value is possibly in the millions. It cannot be duplicated. It was found in 1924 by Anna Mitchell Hedges. A lot of the anthropologists and archaeologists have gone through a lot of trouble to discredit it, but they haven't been able to do so yet. It's been compared to the Moran skull. It's been compared to the Mexican skull in Britain, the Aztec skull in Paris, the Mayan skull, which we worked with for 3.5 months out of Guatemala. It's the only skull that's available to you as a person who is not an archaeologist or an anthropologist.
In just a few moments, you've told us some rather startling things here, Nick. Let me kind of recap them for you. The archaeologists have found a number of these skulls that are made of quartz.
No, they have not.
Who found them?
No skull was found by an archaeologist. That's why no skull is recognized.
Oh, I see. Where did they come from?
Number one, the British skull was taken, stolen from some people who found it in a tomb. And it passed through army ranks eventually to, I believe, a man by the name of Bernie. From Bernie, it went to into the Christie collection. Tiffany from there went on to the British Museum. The Aztec skull was, again, taken by French soldiers out of Mexico and eventually ended up in a collection, the Maximilian collection. And from the Maximilian collection, it ended up in the museum when Napoleon was going around raping nations and taking their museums. Just like the Vatican Library sits in France.
Mm-hmm.
The true occult library is in the Biblica in France, and that's the only place you're going to learn anything about crystals. Then your Moran, Dr. Moran, Digby, and a few others decided to compare the Paris skull with the British skull, and they didn't do that. They ended up doing the British skull, which is called the Mexican skull, or if you want, the Aztec skull, with a skull which was called the Bernie skull, which they claim was the Mitchell Hedges skull, and it gets into a lot of hanky-panky in the 30s. And that was the only study made by an archaeologist and an anthropologist on skulls in the world. The only study, and it covers 3 pages in a magazine called The Book of Man. There's no other study in the world except the ones we've done and so forth and so on. So no archaeologist. If you don't find it, let me explain something to you very quickly. If your museum does not find it in a dig, it's unimportant.
I see.
You see, because no doctor at the museum or at the college or the university could attach his name to the find. And Mr. Mitchell Hedges, F.A. Mitchell Hedges, was an archaeologist and an anthropologist who was involved in some other things, which we can get into, but we won't, and because I was involved in similar things, and I don't want to get into
it. It's a family show, Nick.
Right, I know, but this has to do with such things as possible espionage and stuff like that. And so archaeology and anthropology are one of the ways he moved around the world, just as the German archaeologists and anthropologists moved around prior to the Nazi invasions. And when they found the skull...
Indiana Jones and all that.
Right.
People.
What was disappointing was that there was no archaeologist there from a university or from a museum to put his flag there. See, when people go out on safaris and expeditions in the old days, they didn't go out for a week like they do today or for a couple of weeks over the Easter vacation. They went out for 1, 2, 3, 5 years. And they had to raise money and pay for these expeditions. So you, as an archaeologist, would love to be invited because your chances of ever going on a dig are very rare so that you can publish something. And if you're not invited, you get your feelings hurt. And some of the people who got their feelings hurt, like Thompson and a few others, Digby is one, and Moran and some others, make comments about the skull. The fact is, Anna found it. The natives are there who were there when it was found. Her father was not there at the time it was found. Mm-hmm. Her father came later. It took 2 months to dig the skull out of the temple to even get into it. The rocks were so heavy it took several men to move the stuff, and it was 2 months of digging to get in there. Then another 2 months before they found the jaw of the skull, you see, and this is proven fact. The other thing is that why it's a private skull, this was another thing that hurt many of the museums and people in the profession, because in the dig, everything was given to the American Indian Museum or the British Museum. That was Mr. Mitchell Hedges' belief to give it to museums, but they did not get that skull, because when the skull was taken out of the ground, all the natives fell flat on the floor and started crying and screaming and praying. And within weeks, Mayans were showing up from Peru, from Guatemala, from Mexico, from all over. How the word ever got out that the skull was found, no one knew. So the skull was given to the natives, who had it for 2.5 years. Now, had it not been given to the natives, which they can take that because it's their property, and it's their tomb, their temple, they now were the owners. When Mr. Mitchell Hedges left, they gave him the skull. They did not give it to a museum. They did not give it to somebody in the profession. They gave him the skull, so it was his privately, and he took it all over the world with him. And that, again, annoyed a lot of people.
Well, it just shows the politics and bureaucrats.
It is.
And everything. But the interesting thing, the very interesting thing, the skulls all came, what, from Central America, Mexico, and that area?
Absolutely.
They are perfect replicas of a human skull, but made out of quartz crystal.
Yeah, particularly a woman's head.
A woman's head, it seems. But whenever you look at them, under certain light, now an amazing thing and an astounding thing begins to happen, and there is no explanation for it.
Yeah, well, there are codes to causing things to happen in the skulls, color codes. There are also sound codes, which we've been working on for about 10 years. And these pictures you see back here, which will be on sale at the First International Crystal Congress in San Francisco, are some of the actual photographs that we did color tests with. And each color brings out and produces a different dimension of scenes. Hmm. Now, the skull, you have to understand, is like this glass. You're looking around you. You look right through it.
Right.
Now, the moment you, Bill Jenkins, puts his hand on it or focuses his mind on it, the skull becomes cloudy and sutures begin to appear all through it. And in those sutures, each of those sutures are overlays of pictures that start falling into place. And as they fall into place, they just go on and on and on. And it goes further than that. Some of the pictures here, if you have a moment later to look at them, these pictures transfer to all crystals around it.
Oh, really?
Yes. In other words, if you have a crystal ball there, if you have this crystal pyramid that you see here there, the pictures start appearing also in the crystal ball, which we photographed. We have one here for you to look at. And while you're looking at pictures here, you've got to also stop and look over here at this pyramid or this ball and see it. Now, the thing about it is that when you take this ball away, it continues to show pictures. And we have people now we left there in November, who are looking at pictures today and trying to photograph the pictures in the balls.
And the balls that they had. So he picked up the energy from the skull.
Absolutely. Now, he would probably understand how it happened. I don't, Mr. Bandini.
Yeah, Mr. Bandini may figure that out. Maybe it's involved with scalar energy in some kind.
You got me, I don't know.
But there is a lot of energy here. There's certainly something astounding and fascinating going on with the crystal skulls. There are how many of them? Seven or eight of them?
Well, there's nine that I'm aware of.
Nine.
One we just tracked to the Vatican or into Rome. This is the one that Hitler had gotten his hands on, and it took us nearly 30 years to locate in Berlin, and we were going to try and get there to see if we can get to the people who had it. And it disappeared again. And as of 2 months ago, our people in Italy tell us that there's a skull has arrived in Rome. And we're trying to locate that now.
All right. So we want to take just a little break here and dig into some of the things that you've discovered and the color coding and the light coding and the sound coding and find out maybe what that skull is trying to tell us. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. If you start looking at the skull after you've touched it or you've mentally focused on it, it just starts doing a movie show for you in a way. You're seeing one kind
Absolutely,
of picture after
yes.
another. What are the many different pictures that you've seen? Just, you know, some of them that come to mind. I saw a flying saucer there.
Well, we've seen, this is going to sound, the sounds we get, and which are intriguing me because I've been trying to locate these sounds, after 4 years we found out are the sounds of dolphins, porpoises, and whales.
So you get the sounds out of the skull.
So we've located some of the sounds, and we went through hundreds of records and tapes and to find out what the sounds were, number one. Number two, when you start looking at the skull, this Anna Mitchell Hedges skull, the Mitchell Hedges skull, seems to be the oldest and the most perfect of them. It's not perverted like the others, which I'll explain the perversion. But you seem to be above it, looking down. And as you look down, you're seeing continents. They're different. It's like one big landmass. And then all of a sudden, it's like a slot machine. You pull the lever, and the land begins to move upward in the skull. And the land from down below seems to move where the up was, the land from below comes up. It's like land rotates, number one. Number two, four times we watched the land masses break up. Now, during these times that we watched the land masses break up, we watched people who seemed to go through a metamorphosis. For instance, their hands begin to change and their faces and neck begin to change. And they dig holes and go into these holes and water comes over them. I know it sounds silly, but I can't describe
well,
any other.
That's what you were seeing in the skull.
Okay.
Right?
Then the other group, another group, seems to go into the earth. They seem to go into caves and stuff. Now, the third group, and I know you're going to laugh at this, seem to get on some sort of a thing, which we know doesn't exist, and take off into the sky.
A saucer-shaped thing.
You might say it's saucer-shaped, right.
Swamp gas.
Now, these are the three specific things. Everyone moves to the south, to the east, and to the southeast. No movement to the west. Land comes from the west, as you look at the skull, and begins to join, and then eventually, after the fourth thing, begins to look like American continent and the South American continent. And the African continent, all that seems to have broken away. Okay. Now.
Well, is it almost as if you're watching the movements of a speeded up look at the Earth as the land masses
now move
out?
It seems to me, looking at it, millions of years going by very fast. Then what happens
Steven
is...
Steven Spielberg is listening. I see a new movie is coming.
Well, this is... I know you. This doesn't sound correct, but I'm writing about it, and I'm going to tell it the way I saw it, and this is what happens. Something comes out of the sky, lands down on what seems to be land, and there's still a great deal of water. These people get out of this craft, or whatever you want to call it, wherever it came from, and they make sounds, and the sounds are either whales, dolphins, we've learned, or porpoise sounds. Out of the water and out of the land that's uncovering, where the water's going back, people begin to rise. Some people come out of the earth, but very few seem to come out of the earth. And other people, you're going to get hysterical over this one, seem to fly. I mean, literally seem to have some sort of wings. And
I know a couple
fly.
Of people who do that, you know. That.
Yeah, well, hysterical. I'm trying to... it's hard to describe this on the telephone. I can show you some of this stuff in slides. And where there were forests, there's ice. Where there was ice, there's forest. And there seems to be so many environmental changes. It seems that nature, as you watch, goes through vast time. You have to assume that thousands of years are going by, and then nature seems to change it, and it's always changed with water and what seems to be ground sinking and rising, and then it stops. And when it stops, that's the time that you begin to focus in on the pyramids of Mexico, Central America, parts of South America, the pyramids in Spain and France, the pyramids in China in the Shenzhen area, the pyramids down in the Giza, in the most of which I visited. And all of a sudden, all kinds of things are happening, and cultures, and there are battles. Now, in the meantime, I have to explain to you that there are battles somewhere going on in the heavens, or what looks like heavens, stars, you know, out in the universe. And strange lights are being flashed back and forth, and then the sound changes. There's a different type of sound. It's almost like the sound would start in the left or right side and come into the center of the head and kind of explode inside your head, something like Dr. Lee Sinella's sound machine does, and your head seems to want to explode. Now, we alter this. What we do is we pour purple light into it, or indigo light, and we soften the sound. The color and the light seem to soften the sound so that the intensity of it on your head or your nervous system or your own electromagnetic impulse system seems to calm down from the light. Now, if we hit it with red or a real heavy gold, golden yellow, it increases it. And many of the people get sick or begin to feel very disabled within themselves. Whereas green, bluish colors in the blue range, in the purplish, indigo ranges, violets, and complications can arise when you multiply colors, where we're hitting it with, let's say, yellow and red, or where we hit it with greens and blues, or greens and oranges. All sorts of things are happening. Now, there's a main code system, which I'm not going to give you on the air, but let's say that some of the colors we would play around with are the seven master colors, orange, red, green, blue, you know, yellow and all that. And what we try to do is crisscross. Now, Randy Fonts, who invented the color machine, which we used many years ago when working with communication with plants and stuff, he hits the skull or the crystals at 2,400 colors a minute. That's how fast his colors operate through his lasers. And we have had images appear outside of the skull.
Wait a minute.
I'm dead serious.
Wait a minute, Nick.
We've had images appear. I can show you some photographs of them standing there.
I was saying wait a minute because I didn't...
No head.
It wasn't that I didn't believe you, but I've got to stop and do something.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I will. Wait a minute, too. I mean, the image is coming outside the head. The crystal skull is a remarkable artifact. How old is it, do you think?
Well, You're going to... I'm probably dumb. I'd say anywhere from 25,000 to a quarter million years old. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel.
That's how you feel. So it's been around longer than Los Angeles.
Because in checking with geologists and people at UC and different colleges and universities, they tell me the things that are happening in my head or what I'm seeing could not have happened unless it happened 100 million years ago or 200 million years ago. Or,
yeah, certainly the movement of continental shelves.
And I found out after 10 years that such a place did exist. We were in Toronto, and one of the people up there actually showed me photographs and asked me, is this what you saw? And he called it Gowanaland or something. And I says, that's right. And he says, well, have you ever heard of Pangaea? Have you ever heard of them? And I said, no, I don't know anything about, you know, what you're talking about. And he says, well, all of these things have happened.
Hmm.
He says, but they had to happen millions of years ago. Now, you're trying to tell us that these people, millions of years ago, lived in the ocean, lived within the earth, came from the sky, and lived on top of the earth in a very sophisticated society. And I said, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just telling you what I saw.
What the skull is showing.
And what the skull is. There's not one skull, but several skulls.
And they're all doing the same thing, basically?
Basically, yes. Except the other skulls do not show four changes. They show two changes, and Mayan skull shows three.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, they show different things, though.
Wait a minute. If we don't stop, we're going to end up at the end of this hour doing nothing but commercials.
Oh. I'm sorry.
But I'm so fascinated with what you're talking about. The Mitchell Hedges crystal skull in particular, crystal skulls in general, there are a few, and they are probably the most astounding and fascinating artifact on the face of the earth. And we want to find out more about them. We're talking to Nick Messerino, who has spent a great deal of time with these skulls and probably knows as much about them as anybody on the planet. And it'll be your chance to talk to Nick here in a few minutes. Let me give you the numbers. He is Nick Messerino. We're talking about the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. A crystal skull that if you look at it, trigger it by touching it, or just concentrating on it, it starts unfolding vista after vista, view after view. That gives all of the impression that it's gone back into the very early dawn of the creation of Earth, and we get a chance to look at it. Somehow or another, it seems that skull is recording history right on up to the present. And sounds as well as pictures.
It goes deeper than that.
Deeper than that, okay.
Yeah.
Analyze this some more, Nick. This is fascinating.
Well, what happens basically with the skulls? Take the Mayan skull. We had it for 3.5 months, 24 hours a day. And I locked myself in for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with the skull. Nothing else. And everything that I knew, and I'm not an educated man, the skull seemed to know. It played back my memory bank to me.
Oh, boy.
And it played, the Mitchell Hedges skull played back my memory. Every fairy tale I could think of that ever came into my mind, my invasion, when we invaded France, when we invaded Anzio, when we invaded Sicily, when I was in Africa, when I was in Asia, it seemed to play my whole life back. Like it was taking more from me than I was getting out of it. So that, to me, it was like some sort of unknown computer that you sit in front of and it absorbs mentally the information. You don't even talk to it. Yes, even though I'm asking it questions, it is taking my information and putting it in its category, wherever it is. Now, I'll give you an example. When I was 9, I saw a skull in a mirror. First time I saw a skull, I just come from a funeral. It was one of my pastimes, going to funerals. And I figured it was always nice. Sometimes I even walked into the wakes because there was a lot of food and nobody knew who was there half the time. And during the Depression, it was nice to get some food and some other things. And it was always nice to go to a funeral. So I went home one day and I looked in the mirror and the skull looked at me. Now, the skull on its head, the crown of its head, had a black reptile come out. And then on the sides, over where the ears would be, other reptiles came out, one on each side, and one came out of the back. Now, the skull in the front came out and had feathers on it.
Now, this is what you saw when you looked in the mirror. And you should have seen yourself.
Yes, I should have seen myself.
Kid.
Yes, I've been mirror gazing since
back in those
no,
days.
No, I was a shiny medium at the age of four, and I did all kinds of seances and stuff like that. So I was very proficient reading mirrors. Mm-hmm. We would always have a mirror, and I would tell them what I saw in the mirror about whoever it was we were talking about. And the skull appeared.
We should mention that you do have this. You're well known for your psychic ability, and you do a lot of...
Slightly,
things.
Yes. Whatever psychic is, I've never figured out.
Never figured it out.
But another thing that happened, so you understand, I can give you three instances. I'm looking in the mirror, and I see this person having a baby, and as the baby is taken out, this man and woman who are in all these Indian robes or feather robes, I consider them Indian, I don't know what they were, put the skull inside the womb and leave it there. The other one is where they are taking a child from the stomach area and they place the skull in place of it. And another one is where they are removing the heart from a man and placing the skull while the heart is on the chest within the chest cavity. Now, I forgot all this.
Yeah.
I really did. And when I was in southern France, I met my first skull outside of a museum with a secret society there, which we don't have to get into, but they have a skull. And they, for some reason or other, showed me the skull, which I never could understand. I've seen skulls from people who, out of nowhere, come up to me and show me the skull, and they tell me that they say things to me, and I answer in response, and I don't even know what I answer. But then we get very involved. One priest gave me a small skull to wear, which I wear around my neck at times, told me wherever I go in the jungle, if I would leave the skull out, I would never be harmed.
Hmm.
And he had a rose quartz skull that was on the Guatemalan border, which moved bulldozers. It was the most beautiful skull I've ever seen in my life, and I've been looking for it now for 20, 30 years, whatever it is, and I'll go find it again if someone gives me a hint where it's at. But when I looked into the skull, here I saw snakes coming out of the top.
All of these things that you had experienced?
Everything I experienced at the age of 9 were coming out of the skull that I was looking into. And it baffled the blazes out of me. And I can tell you 100 other experiences.
So it was picking up your thoughts and then reading them out to you.
It was playing back to me, or within its history computer bank, whatever you want to call it, I had somehow touched into the bank and saw these things without ever seeing a skull.
Uh-huh.
Because the first skull I saw was in Britain and then in France and so forth and so on, the first tour museum. And here all these are happening in the skull, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and then I saw one where I was a man, or at least it looked like me, because I kept looking at the guy, and I was wondering why he was sneering at me. He actually sneered at me, turned and sneered at me from the skull, and another one spit at one of the ladies. It gets quite involved.
You have a lot of things going on.
Oh, yeah, we had as many as 33 people at a time. We had 33 groups working on the Mayan skull. And many people, of course, have worked with the Mitchell Hedges. None as long as I have, other than Frank Dorland. And the things that have happened are just... It's a computer.
So it's not only playing back history as it's recorded.
It adds to it. It adds the gaps.
It adds to it every day. It adds your history if you're in
front of it. Right. Anything it sees, it records.
Definitely, this skull is not something to put in the hands of my wife.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Now, may I make one comment? The Mitchell Hedges skull did not show the perversions, Bill.
Uh-huh.
The Mitchell Hedges skull at no time showed people being killed or sacrificed and it being used. All the other skulls did. The most perverted of all is this Aztec skull from Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then the British skull is very bad.
By perverted, you mean it's showing a lot of
it's
the
showing too
side.
Much of the... what I call sacrifices and slaughter. Whoever got the skulls did not understand its use, and because it was a skull, probably felt that being a crystal, it absorbs energy, so they gave it energy from life, from death, from all sorts of life forms were absorbed by it. Whereas the Mitchell Hedges skull shows none of this. The Mitchell Hedges skull deals with a society that I have not been able to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
That deals with clothing that I have never seen in this world, and places and buildings I have never seen in this world. And I've been around a little bit. and deals with, how would you say, worlds that cannot exist unless they're inside of this world or under the ocean.
Or some other place.
Or, that's the point, some other place. I don't want to go that far because...
Well, we do that all the time on this show.
People think I'm nuts when I talk about possibly another planet. It shows... Three?
Believe me, Nick, on this show, we don't think you're nuts.
Okay.
We think you're right on target when you start talking.
But Mitchell Hedges talks about three, or doesn't talk, it shows you three universes, larger than all of our galaxy put together. And then it shows you a giant sun, and it has planets around this sun. And it shows you what looks like, and we know they don't exist, I call them UFOs, hopping from place to place,
swamp
and then
gas.
Then coming here. Yes, swamp gas from Venus, and finally lands here, and a planet out here somewhere, which looks like it's by what I think is the moon, because we described the moon before anybody ever got on it. We were able to
look at
the moon, and we were able to draw it and make notes of it. And a lot of it was proven when they finally got on the moon.
Have any of the astronauts ever seen the moon pictures, the astronauts that were there?
Have they ever seen our pictures?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Or looked at the skull?
No, we don't have many scientists interested in what we're doing.
That's very, very intriguing to me, that here is this astounding thing going on, and we have some astounding minds out there that are looking for information, keys to our beginnings. And it seems like there's a computer ready just to tell you anything you want to know, but we're just going to turn our back on it, which is...